Johnny.
4 weeks. 20 papers, that's $2 plus tip.
Gee, Johnny, I don't have a dime. Sorry.
Didn't ask for a dime. $2.
Well, it's funny. See, my mom had to leave early to take my brother to school and my dad to work because...
$2. Cash.
See, the problem here is that my little brother this morning got his arm caught in the microwave and my grandmother dropped acid and she freaked out and hijacked a school bus full of penguins. So it's kind of a family crisis. So come back later. Great.
I want my $2.
Movie making in Utah. More than 800 films have been filmed in Utah since the 1930s, and then it got going in earnest with the Perry Brothers near Cedar City and continues to the present day, of course, has pumped millions and millions of dollars into the Utah economy. Utah was one of the first. Of course, now most states have a film commission, and there's fierce competition. Until a couple of years ago, there had been no history of movie making in Utah. James Dark, who is curator of BYU Motion Picture Archive, has remedied that and now out with a second edition of the book, When Hollywood Came to Town. And Better Off Dead was the movie we heard the famous clip from there. And earlier we heard music from The Searchers. The movies run the gamut in Utah. We're going to talk about it. We want to know if you have an experience with the movies. Seems like a lot of people have either been in movies, been an extra, been in a cast or a crew. We're going to spend the hour with James Dark and hear some clips from some of the movies as well. James Dark, welcome to the program.
It's wonderful to be with you, and it's a fun topic to talk about.
And I think a lot of us know that famous clip there, $2. I want my $2. There's
That's
some
right.
some iconic, you know, I think of Planet of the Apes, famous speeches there. The list goes on and on. And sometimes we don't know that these movies were made in Utah.
And you have hit the point right on the button. The big surprise that my readers get, as long as the book has been out, is, well, I know films like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid or Planet of the Apes or even The Greatest Story Ever Told. I've seen these films. I had no idea that they were made in whole or in part in Utah. Or even a film for classic film lovers like Drums Along the Mohawk about the Revolutionary War, starring Henry Fonda and Claudette Colbert. They're even more astonished to hear that wasn't filmed in upper New York State, but it was filmed just 5 miles east of Cedar Breaks in Iron County in the Alpine Mountains of Utah.
Hmm. And in fact, and I was watching in another interview you did, you were talking about the fact that some of these pristine areas are no longer pristine. They no longer look the way they did. So watching these beautiful areas of Utah on film, this is preserving the history of Utah.
You can see how Utah looked to generations of people who were here before we were. In fact, one of the more interesting areas that has been overrun is a wonderful resort area called Duck Creek up on Cedar Mountain above Cedar City. That's now full of vacation homes. But when you watch the films My Friend Flicka or Thunderhead Son of Flicka, you will see these beautiful, expansive meadows with a stream running through it. Well, that's the way people knew it for five generations before all the vacation homes ended up being there.
So you can watch the movie and see how Utah used to be in some of these areas.
That's correct. And this is a case that I make for especially Utahns appreciating their movie history, because by preserving certain Hollywood films made in Utah, we are, in fact, preserving Utah history.
Hmm. You make the case that this ties into tourism, that people from around the world sometimes come to Utah just to see spot X, Y, or Z in whatever movie.
I make the case that these Hollywood movies filmed in Utah are a Hollywood-paid celluloid postcard that goes all over the world at their expense. to advertise the wonders and beauties of Utah. And back in the old days of the 20s, 30s, 40s, and even into the late 50s, tourists were allowed to come up and watch filming going on. For example, Clint Walker, who was a big Western star of the hit TV series Cheyenne, made his first film in Kanab called Fort Dodds with Virginia Mayo and Brian Keith, 1957. It was estimated by the publicity department of Utah that tourism in that part of the state increased 35% during the summer that that film and other films were being shot there, and that over 4,000 cars a day were going through Kanab at that time. So imagine all those people watching all of this, getting the magic of Hollywood into their system, and then going home and saying, we're going on another vacation to Utah. So a history of movie making in Utah is not just a anecdotal fun history of movies, but it really is a vital history of what's gone on in our state for at least 100 years.
What are some of the popular spots nowadays connected with movies that people come from around the world to see?
Well, most of them occur in northern Utah, between Salt Lake City and Ogden. In the old days, much of the activity was occurring in southern Utah, St. George, Kanab, especially Moab, and with a lot of the land restrictions imposed by Grand Staircase, Escalante, and other things, environmental laws, fewer and fewer areas are available in southern Utah for movie making, although most of John Carter, the recent film, was shot in southern Utah. But Westerns have been on the decline, and so hundreds of TV movies and TV series episodes have been made in the Salt Lake City area and the environs, Park City, near Ogden. And the book documents all of these more than you could ever hope to remember, beginning in the 1970s and continuing on until today.
And I think we, at least I have the maybe misconception that most of this is in still today in southern Utah. You're saying that it's all over the state.
It really is. But the Salt Lake City and its environs were virtually ignored in the 20s, 30s, and 40s because that isn't where Westerns were made. When that genre went into a decline, then Salt Lake City and surrounding areas really picked up in production because of contemporary dramas that were usually the subjects of TV movies and TV series. So it's had a fascinating history. And now other states have realized what a great boon to their state's economy movie making can be. So in the last 20 to 30 years, all the states, predominantly being Arizona, New Mexico, Michigan, North Carolina, have passed laws to give incentives to motion picture companies coming into their states in the form of tax rebates. And up until recently, Michigan was the most competitive by returning to the movie companies 42% of money that they documented had been spent in the state. Well, Michigan has had economic problems lately, and they've rescinded that very generous rebate. Utah's percentage is 25%.
Is that pretty typical?
Yes. In terms of Arizona and New Mexico, that is very competitive. But what filmmakers like about the state of Utah is that even though their percentage isn't as generous as many other states, they love Utah for the landscape, but particularly for the people. There is a tremendous pool of skilled talent, both in front of the camera and behind the camera, that makes fewer people that the production studios have to bring from Hollywood. And that saves them money, and it also gives them a very competent crew of local people for whom they don't have to pay lodging per diems and other transportation expenses. But Utahns have been involved in the movie business for many, many years, and the production companies like a skilled workforce. Helps them to come in on time and under budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important. We're talking with James Stark, He's out with a second edition of his book, When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah. We're going to be hearing some clips from various movies and talking about movie making in Utah. A little later in the program, we'll go back to the beginnings with the Perry brothers. Very interesting story there, how those brothers went out and attracted movies to the Cedar City area. If you'd like to join the conversation, we hope that you will. Maybe you have an experience with the movies. Seems like a lot of people in Utah do. They've been involved in at least one movie. Or have a family history, perhaps, of helping with the movies in Utah. We'd love to hear that history. And you can reach us by email at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com, or call us toll-free, 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. We do have an email from Steve McIntyre, our friend in Beaver Dam, Arizona. Here's what Steve says. I was motorcycling through the Duck Creek area about 3 weeks ago, coming from Bryce Canyon, heading to Cedar Breaks and Bryan Head. And yes, there certainly is a flourishing vacation colony there, but I dare say you could still make a film depicting unsettled meadows, woods, and creeks there if you set your mind to it. That's what Steve says. Thanks for that, Steve. So I guess... There's vacation homes there, but maybe you could still film out in Duck Creek area.
Well, there are plenty of meadows, that's to be sure. I was referring to the pristine area that the movie companies chose to do the Flicka films, as well as others, that really suited the look of how they wanted a Western to look like. And that area that they chose more than a few times is now covered. And the Duck Creek area is still a gorgeous area to go. It's just that in preserving these motion pictures, you can have a very good idea of what it looked like once upon a time. Another area like this is Kanab Canyon, where the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary is. Dozens of movies were made there, including the feature film version of The Lone Ranger with Clayton Moore and Jay Silverheels from the television series. And much of that was made in Kanab Canyon, but you would hardly recognize it nowadays because it's full of vegetation and full of trees, which it wasn't at the time it was made because the Robinson family grazed cattle down there, and you could easily see Kanab Creek. Well, you can't see it anymore.
And there are some changes in movie making because of the national parks, aren't there? You can't film on some of these areas anymore.
That's correct. And in fact, the folks in Kane County were very irate with the administrative decree that created Grand Staircase Escalante, not because they don't think that the area is beautiful enough for an area like that, but they weren't really consulted, and it cut off considerable acreage that had been used for motion picture work. And further sealed the fate of that area for major motion pictures being made there. And some might say, well, that's really a good thing because movie companies just tear up the land and ruin it and then they leave. Well, once upon a time, decades ago, that may have been the case. But for the most part, my research has shown that the movie companies are very deferential to the local public and to the land that they use, and they clean up very, very well. One of the reasons being they want to return and make some more. That was the case in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, and they did a great job of doing that. And plus, the money that was used by the locals who were paid extraordinary salaries allowed them to pay off mortgages, send kids to school, and allowed them to do things that cattle ranching and farming, they weren't able to do before. They loved the movie makers coming to town.
In fact, you have a quote I've heard you give from, I think, a rancher down in that area.
Oh, a great Carl Tangren was his name, and he was a Moab rancher. And I was talking to him about what it was like to work with John Wayne, and then I asked him the general question, and I said, Carl, on the whole, and you've been here many, many years, on the whole, was movie making a good thing or a bad thing for you folks? And he just looked at me and he said, we really like the movie companies coming here because all they take are pictures and all they leave is money.
Yeah, that sums it up. It's a very good industry.
It really does. And, you know, from time to time, and I document some of these in the book, there were problems with the locals. Sometimes local extras got a little ambitious and wanted more money and would stage strikes. And then some of the other locals would sit down and reason with them and say, you know, this has been a great thing that's been happening a long time. Let's be sure we're not getting too greedy. And they would resolve the issue and go on. But that wasn't unique to Utah. That happened in many areas where the movie companies went to make movies. And the differences were resolved and things went forward. But for the most part, the Utah populace was exemplary in terms of how they dealt with the movie companies. Otherwise, they wouldn't have come back so often since the mid-1920s.
We're going to take a brief break here, and we're talking with James Dark. He's author of When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah. And we'll go back to the beginnings with the Perry Brothers when we come back. And then we'll, of course, through the hour, bring it up to current times. Such movies as SLC Punk and some of the Mormon films that have been filmed in Utah. And, of course, the great history of John Ford and John Wayne, Monument Valley, and all those movies. There's a great history. More than 800 films have been made in Utah since 1913. Hundreds of millions of dollars pumped into the Utah economy. James Dark has updated his history of movie making in Utah. Let's go out to the break here with a little bit from the movie John Carter, which Mr. Dark mentioned. It's a more modern movie. And we'll hear some more clips from the movies as we go along. We'd love to hear your movie-making experiences. Many of us do have brushes with Hollywood in Utah, with so many movies being made in the state. And you can join us at 1-800-826-1495 or email us at upraxis@gmail.com. We have a couple more listener comments and questions. We'll get to those as well following the break.
We are strong because we despise weakness. Let them be crushed like unhatched eggs.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Time to make an appointment with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You'll get great tips for healthy living, like this recipe for
lamb Rogan Josh.
We always have a great time, so will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tune in Friday mornings at 10 here on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by the Celebrate America Show in the Miller Mood, USO style September 8th, 4th through 8th, a 1940s musical review, dinner and dance with the Larry Smith Orchestra in the USU Ballroom. Tickets with or without dinner are at CelebrateAmericaShow.com.
His name was Jeremiah Johnson. They say he wanted to be a mountain man. Story goes that he was a man of proper wit and adventurous spirit, suited to the mountains. Nobody knows whereabouts he come from, and don't seem to matter much. He was a young man, and ghosty stories about the tall hills didn't scare him none. He was looking for a Hawking gun, 50 caliber or better. He settled for a 30, but damn, it was a genuine Hawking. You couldn't go no better. Bought him a good horse and traps and another truck that went with being a mountain man, and said goodbye to whatever life was down there below.
Just where is it I could find bear, beaver, and other critters worth cash money when skinned? Ride due west as the sun sets. Turn left at the Rocky Mountains.
This here's his story.
That, of course, a clip from Jeremiah Johnson. That's one of the movies, more than 800, filmed in Utah. Hundreds of millions of dollars pumped into Utah's economy. There'd never been a history of movie making in Utah until James Dark, curator of the Motion Picture Archive at BYU, came along. A couple of years ago, he wrote When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah, is out with the second edition of the book. And we're spending the hour with James Dark talking about movie making in Utah. By the way, James Dark will be doing an event for the King's English Bookshop in conjunction with Salt Lake City Library. That's at the Anderson Foothill location. That's on September 20th, an opportunity to interact with James Dark on this subject. You can join us with your movie-making experience in Utah at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or email us at upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. James Dark, Jeremiah Johnson, other Robert Redford movies important to Utah's economy as well. That brought Robert Redford to Utah and Sundance and the rest of it.
Well, you know, Robert Redford has a interesting and sometimes controversial legacy in the state of Utah, and yet he did more to bring a renaissance of movie making to Utah than anyone else, really, because as you accurately observed, he was the one who brought 20th Century Fox and director George Roy Hill to film most of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid in Washington County, in the environs of Zion National Park. And after that was made, that was the ultimate buddy film that spawned so many more that we even have today. That was such a popular film that the amount of filmmaking increased in the state of Utah, and he brought many of his own films, like Jeremiah Johnson, The Electric Horseman, and others, to the state of Utah, and then ultimately founding the Sundance Film Festival and the Sundance Film Institute, both of which are now legendary. They're fixtures in the state of Utah.
How did Robert Redford know about Utah and that this would be a good location for Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
He drove through it in the 60s on his way to the West Coast and was so fascinated by the beauty of the area that he looked into it even more. And that began a real love affair and then purchasing property, which was called Wildwood up Provo Canyon. And with the exceptional money that he made from Butch Cassidy, he and Paul Newman bought the area that is now the Sundance Resort. And then eventually Redford bought Newman out and owned it outright. So it was a great story. And then he started conceiving of film projects where his property could be used. And of course, Jeremiah Johnson is seen in his property is seen in much of Jeremiah Johnson, including that wonderful glacier behind Mount Timpanogos for those great winter scenes.
I wonder, you talked about the fierce competition nowadays, and Michigan had their rebate up to 42% or something. You said Utah was around 25%. Some of the western states, including Utah, do they have to kick in as much? It would seem to me that there are just some natural advantages. You can come to Utah and you could film any kind of movie here in Utah, just traveling a few miles in one direction or the other.
Well, and that has historically been the great attraction to Utah, particularly in Kane County area, where you have alpine forests, you have wind-driven sand dunes, and you can have miles and miles of open prairie. But the nature of competition is fierce. I know New Mexico has built studio facilities so that when the production companies come into the area, they can do interiors as well as exteriors. So it's not just the rebate amount that is attractive. It is all the other kinds of facilities that are being offered to these movie companies. But again, Utah remains, I believe, in a competitive edge because of the experienced talent pool here, cinematographers, makeup, grips, gaffers, all these other people, as well as extras and other acting talent. Very attractive.
We have a couple of questions from a listener that actually fit very nicely right here. The first question, recently it was announced that they're going to build a movie studio in Park City. How will this change the future of films in Utah?
It will provide a magnet, an additional inducement for these companies to come to Utah so that they can do as much of their work as they can in the state. And for Utah, the attraction is that means more money left in the state and an infrastructure of film production that will draw even more filmmakers to the state. That's a wonderful thing when a studio facility can be built.
By the way, this is Steve and Logan. His second question, the Utah legislature was considering changing tax rates for film companies to encourage more movies to film here. Are they still working on this? Do you know?
They are always working on that, and that, as Marshall Moore, who is the director of the Utah Film Commission, will tell you, they are always campaigning for better economic circumstances so as to attract the movie industry. And the great boon there is these are good, clean dollars that are coming into the state. There is no industrial waste. There is no real adverse environmental impact. This is just great money that goes to hundreds of businesses in the state and benefits them. So with every dollar of incentive that the state offers, you get an exponential amount of financial return. It's just good business.
We're talking with James Dark, author of When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah. It's out in its second edition. And he'll be doing an event for King's English Bookshop on September 20th. That'll be at the Salt Lake City Library at the Anderson Foothill location on September 20th. We have James Dark with us for the hour. And if you'd like to participate, you can call 1-800-826-1495, toll-free, 1-800-826-1495, or email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. What have you tell me about the beginnings? And this begins with the Perry brothers, right, in southern Utah. How did they get the idea, and what happened that they brought a movie, and I guess that started things, to Utah?
Well, 30 years ago, when I started doing this as a transplant from California, it was the Perry brothers story that was the hook that has kept me going all this time before I actually put the book together 2 years ago. The Perrys, Chauncey, Whitney, and Gronway, were Salt Lake City natives who moved to Cedar City in the early years of the 20th century and founded a number of businesses in Cedar City. But one of those that changed the nature of the movie business in Utah was when they bought the transportation concession in about 1916 to what was then known as Zion National Monument. In other words, they would take the tourists around in these open-air buses and show them the park. Well, during the winter months, there wasn't much to do. And so Chauncey Perry, who had been a pilot in World War I, began flying his plane around the area, taking pictures, and he would take the train to Hollywood in the winter and like a door-to-door salesman, go to the various studios and say, look at this beautiful land that we've got here. Well, eventually, in 1924, he sold the great Western actor Tom Mix on the idea of coming up to Cedar City and basing a film there, which was called The Deadwood Coach. Now, Tom Mix was the biggest Western star of the 1920s. There was just no one even close to him. So to have Mix come and make a film in Utah was a big event. A rodeo was staged, a big parade in Cedar City, and the film was made in Bryce Canyon, in Zion National Park, and areas around Grafton and in the Grand Canyon. Sadly, the film does not exist, but the impact of that film made in Utah showed Hollywood producers, gee, we don't have to keep using the same locations in California, which our audiences are just getting tired of for Westerns. That began the rush to Utah. The Perrys then bought an old farmhouse in Kanab, converted it into a what they called a tourist lodge, and the Perry Lodge, which exists today in Kanab, became the headquarters for more than 120 movies made in that area from the early 1930s up to the late 70s. The Perry story is a supreme Horatio Alger Utah story that very few people knew, that I didn't know until I started doing research. And it is to them that goes the credit for this incredible movie business that's been going on in Utah ever since.
And I suppose this could have been a story, you know, set in Nevada or New Mexico or Colorado. It happened to be the Perry brothers.
It really could have been set anywhere, but because of the entrepreneurial genius of these three Utahns, they got it going in the state of Utah. And in fact, if you stay in Perry Lodge, you will see movie star photos covering the wall of the lobby and the restaurant with signatures of folks that include Charlton Heston, Tyrone Power, Gregory Peck, Maureen O'Hara, Randolph Scott. It's a real tour through the past that attests to the legacy of movie making down there.
Now, you say that, you know, it's a clean industry. I think people generally from the beginning were pleased with this. The one rancher told you all they take is pictures and all they leave is money. Have there been bad experiences? Have people ever expressed to you, boy, I wish they hadn't come to town?
I never came across that, to be frank. And I was going down to Moab and Kanab and St. George numerous times to do interviews with locals. And I didn't encounter anybody who didn't think there were favorable aspects to the movie companies coming. Yes, some people felt inconvenienced when all the motel rooms were filled and family couldn't come to town. Some of them didn't like these outsiders coming in and the possible negative impact that these Californians and others would have on these small towns in Utah. I found that to be a minority, though. And I'll tell you something else, and this is a tribute to communities such as St. George and Moab and Kanab. When the movie companies had their heyday in Kane County from the mid-20s to the late 70s, for most of that time, Kanab had a population of only 1,350 people. Now it's more than 4,000. 1,350. And at times, they entertained five different movie companies during a shooting season, which normally went from July through October. That can stress a town tremendously, not only in terms of resources, but in patience as well. And the testimonials that I've had from film directors and producers and crew members about how helpful the locals were, even under trying circumstances, were just amazing. And I'll tell you one of them. I interviewed a significant producer in Hollywood by the name of Howard Koch in the mid-1970s. He produced the Airplane movies and Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg. He became a very big wheel at Paramount. When I interviewed him in 1975, he told me the love affair he had with the people of Kanab and a particular contact man there who was a rancher who facilitated work with the movie companies, with the locals. His name was Fay Hamblin. And he said, Koch said, when he went up there to make his first film in 1953, he had mortgaged his home to pay for the completion of the production. And on the first day, it started snowing. And he said, Fay, I don't know if you're a religious person or not, but I think we need to say a prayer, because if it doesn't stop snowing, we're going to delay the production of this film by many days. I'm going to lose my home. I'm going to go broke. So Koch was telling me, all these years later, we bowed our heads. We silently said our prayer. Then we opened our eyes and looked around, and it stopped snowing. And he said, I looked at Fay, and he looked at me, and I said to him, was it your prayer or was it mine? And they got the production done under budget, and Howard Koch came back to make 10 feature films in the Kanab area that included the film Sergeant's Three with Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack in 1962. And the people loved Howard Koch. Koch loved the people. And when Faye Hamlin passed away in the 1970s, Howard Koch, now a big producer at Paramount, flew his own plane to Kanab and delivered the eulogy for Faye Hamlin. Now, that is how close the connection became between the Hollywood studios and not just the landscapes, but the people of Utah. And there are stories like that in St. George and in Moab as well. It was a personal connection.
We're talking with James Dark, who is curator of BYU Motion Picture Archive and author of When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah. That's out with a second edition now. We're talking about, obviously, movie making in Utah. You can reach us by email at upraxcess@gmail.com or 1-800-826-1495. We're going to take a brief break now, and we'll come back and talk about some more current movies in Utah and talk about some movies that not only were filmed in Utah, but are about Utah and Utahns. There's been sort of a revival of Utah, local Utah movie making in recent years. And why don't we go out to this break with a clip from Thelma and Louise. It's the iconic place here. James Stark, Thelma and Louise, that final scene, is that Dead Horse Point? Where is that?
Well, it's not far from Dead Horse Point, but it's an area that is fairly difficult to get to. But one of the locals there took me to the point where the car was supposed to have gone off the off the cliff into the Colorado River, and it's a gorgeous spot. Mm-hmm. But it's not far from Dead Horse Point.
And Dead Horse Point has been featured in many movies. There's a memorable scene that still gives me vertigo when I see it. It's one of the Mission Impossible films. Tom Cruise, of course, he's not actually, I don't think, dangling from Dead Horse Point, but they're imposing that spectacular cliff on his stunt.
Yes,
just
it's
one example.
Breathtaking, and that was used to begin the film.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Before we go to break, that brings to mind something else. I know you've said. An example of how a location, a spectacular view, can really impose itself on a movie. And you talk about Stagecoach and the fact that the Monument Valley scene is only a few seconds of the movie.
It's phenomenal that when photographs are used to when someone is writing or talking about Stagecoach, you get that tremendous, it looks almost like an aerial view of those famous sandstone sentinels called the Mittens in Monument Valley. And those scenes comprised 90 seconds or 1% of the entire movie. And yet the impact of those few minutes in that film, which was predominantly shot on California locations, by the way, made Monument Valley iconic and made Stagecoach a signature film when you talk about making movies in Utah. That's how arresting the landscape of Utah can be. It also occurred in another film, the big biblical epic from 1965, The Greatest Story Ever Told, directed by George Stevens. All of it was filmed in Utah. So when you see Charlton Heston as John the Baptist baptizing the early Christian converts, he's baptizing them in the Colorado River near Lake Powell, or what was to become Lake Powell, because that was filmed in 1963 as the water was filling up after the Glen Canyon Dam had been built. And when Jesus delivers the Sermon on the Mount, it's not in Jerusalem. It is actually Grand View Point in Canyonlands National Park. So the entire movie was filmed in the state of Utah, and the sets for the city of Jerusalem, which were built next to the shore of the Colorado River as the waters were rising, many of those sets were left there. So Utah has the distinguishing feature of having an Atlantis in its own state, an underwater city. And it's the underwater city of at least part of the sets that comprise Jerusalem for that film.
We'll have more with James Dark following a break, and I'm sure we'll all be visualizing that beautiful scenery near the Colorado River. This clip from Thelma Louise as we go to break.
You're not going to give up on me, are you?
What do you mean?
You're not going to make a deal with that guy? I just want to know.
Thelma, I'm not making any deals.
I mean, I'd understand if you're thinking about it. In a way, you got something to go back for. Jimmy and all.
Jimmy's not an option.
But, I don't know, you know, something's, like, crossed over in me, and I can't go back. I mean, I just couldn't live.
I know. I know what you mean. Anyway, don't want to end up on the damn Geraldo show.
Yeah.
They're charging us with murder.
Ooh.
Yeah, they say that we got to figure out if we want to come in dead or alive.
Gosh. Did he say anything positive at all?
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. This week we have a journalist who went undercover in the American food industry. We have a conversation with novelist turned wine writer Jay McInerney. And we learn the Moroccan way with vegetables. Join us. That's this week on The Splendid Table from APM.
Tuesday mornings at 10 o'clock here on Utah Public Radio.
I have to ask you something.
Yeah, go ahead, ask me.
Well, why do you go out of your way to look like a bum?
I look like a bum?
Well, not in a bad way.
I look like a bum in a good way.
Aren't you, like, rebelling against society?
Put that simply, kind.
Wouldn't it be more of an act of rebellion if you didn't spend so much time buying blue hair dye and going out to get punky clothes? It seems so petty. And stop me if I'm being offensive.
Oh, no, go right ahead. That's fine.
You want to be an individual, right? You look like you're wearing a uniform. I mean, you look like a punk. That's not rebellion. That's fashion.
Then what's rebellion?
Rebellion happens in the mind. You can't create it. You just are that way.
We're talking with James Dark, curator of the Motion Picture Archive at Brigham Young University, and author of When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah. We're hearing some clips from movies. There's a movie which was not only filmed in Utah, was about Utah in many ways, SLC Punk. And there has been, James Dark, a resurgence of movies made about Utah culture. There's the Mormon movie revival and some other movies made about Utah, not only filmed in Utah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because Utah and movie making just isn't composed of Westerns and the John Ford mystique. It deals with Utah itself. I think of the 1982 big-budgeted, big publicized television movie, The Executioner's Song, about the life and death of the real-life Gary Gilmore at the Point of the Mountain from Norman Mailer's book. And in that very same year was Side by Side, The Osmond Story. I mean, can you imagine a starker contrast than that? Well, maybe perhaps Salt Lake City Punk.
Yeah.
That may do it.
Yeah.
There was also a TV movie with Mark Harmon as the serial killer Ted Bundy. That was filmed in Utah as well. And then there was a film in 1981, a television movie, with Diane Lane and a very young Helen Hunt called Child Bride of Short Creek, about the raids in southern Utah and Hilldale during the polygamy raids in the early 1950s. So Utah has been the subject and the landscape of many of Utah's own stories in movies and in television movies.
What do you think the role of movies about a place, for example, something like SLC Punk, what role do you think that plays in the local culture and understanding that we have about ourselves? Does that hold an important place?
Well, I think it imparts a certain validation to an image that's being presented. I must say, when I started doing research on the book, I didn't even know Salt Lake City Punk. And it turned out to be one of the most unusual movies that I had ever seen made in the state of Utah, because it testified to a part of the local culture that most people wouldn't readily acknowledge or recognize.
Were there special surprises as you started out doing this research? You mentioned the Perry brothers. You know, not many people have known about that history. Other surprises?
Yes, there was. And one of the biggest ones that when I'm at book signings that my readers talk about being astonished is a 1947 film, a Western called Ramrod, starring the very then famous Joel McRae, Veronica Lake. And it was all filmed inside Zion National Park, beautifully filmed and directed by Andre de Toth, who made a lot of films, film noirs, these gritty, mean street detective films of the 1940s. Well, this was a Western, but it's very brutal, very realistic, and was a very big production. And in 1947, Utah was celebrating its centennial. And someone in the Utah state legislature said, well, why don't we pass a resolution making Ramrod Utah's centennial film? Well, they did that. And then the controversy began. Some people saw the film in the legislature and said, wait a minute, this is a violent Western. We shouldn't be having a violent Western as Utah's centennial film. And an actual controversy broke out in the Utah state legislature. Some called it Hamrod instead of Ramrod. But nevertheless, in February of 1947, there was a big star-studded premiere in Salt Lake City. 50 stars came. Radio broadcasts had their origins in Salt Lake City. And it turned out to be a very, very big deal. But how many people in 2012 know that Utah had a centennial movie?
Yeah, I certainly didn't. I love that line, Hamrod. Is it a? I guess that was a review from that legislator. Was it a good movie?
Oh, it's a great movie. In fact, I have, in association with some of my book signings, I've had a screening of the film, and the people who have seen it just love it. Yeah, it's a great Western, a great movie, a terrific cast, and it shows off Zion National Park and the historic ghost town of Grafton in a way that it has never been seen since that time. Yeah, it's a very good movie.
Do you have a favorite movie filmed in Utah?
I do. And unfortunately, it's a film that's very hard to get hold of because it's never been on home video, but you can see it on Turner Classic Movies or the Western Channel. It's a Western taken from the famous Will James novel, Smokey. And the 1946 Technicolor version, made by 20th Century Fox, starred Fred McMurray, Ann Baxter, and was the very first film of a later Academy Award winner, Burl Ives, the balladeer, the wonderful, smooth singer of great American songs. And it's the story of a cowhand, Fred McMurray, who finds this beautiful stallion and tries to save him from rodeo promoters and thieves and other people. It's a beautiful movie.
Well, by the way, you've updated the book for the second edition. I'm wondering, as you look forward and maybe future editions, what will you have your eye on in terms of the future of movie making in Utah?
I will be looking as to the types of films that filmmakers find suitable for the Utah landscapes or the urban landscapes. And also I'll be looking to see how well Utah does in relation to other states and indeed other countries such as Canada and Australia. and the direction in which filmmaking goes, and how developed the talent is in the state of Utah. I think there's an exciting future for the motion picture industry in the state of Utah, and apparently so do readers. I think even my publisher may have been surprised that the first edition of this book sold out in 16 months and gave me an opportunity to bring the story all the way up to the end of 2011. We'll see when we do the third edition.
Hmm. We just have a couple of minutes left. I wonder what's going to be going on at the at BYU, there at the Motion Picture Archive.
Well, for the past 13 years, I've directed the BYU Motion Picture Archive film series, where we show classic American films twice a month. And we are starting our season this fall with that great romantic drama, Sabrina, with Audrey Hepburn, William Holden, Humphrey Bogart. And for those who would like to find out the schedule, they can get on to the Special Collections website at BYU, and they can just Google L. Tom Perry Special Collections and click on events, and they can get our series schedule. And these are free, and they're actually shown on film. We don't project video. These are rare film prints that we show of classic American films. And we're even going to be showing one of those covered in my book called The Conqueror, where John Wayne plays Genghis Khan, and Southern Utah, Snow Canyon by St. George, stands in for 12th century Mongolia. Oh,
yeah.
It's a fascinating film.
I've seen the movie. It's worth the it's worth. I think John Wayne plays a character named Hulagu or something. And yeah, it's worth
Temujin becomes Genghis Khan, and. The film has been quite controversial since then because that was being filmed during the time that there was above-ground atomic bomb testing. And it was largely from the publicity surrounding that film that the whole downwinders issue got raised.
Yeah, a lot of the cast and crew died later of cancer, didn't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, including John Wayne.
Yeah. Well, we are going to go out with a couple of clips. Let's hear a bit from 127 Hours and then Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, just a little bit of each one to go out, just to give you a flavor of movie making in Utah. The book is When Hollywood Came to Town, A History of Movie Making in Utah. The author is James Dark, who is curator of BYU Motion Picture Archive. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure as well. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It is 7 o'clock here in Canyonland, USA.
Hey, Aaron. Mom still has not heard from you. Will you just call her, please? I'll talk to you soon.
And this morning, on the Boulder, we have a very special guest, Aaron Ralston!
Oh, gosh. Kid, the next time I say let's go someplace like Bolivia, let's go someplace like Bolivia.
Next time. Ready?
No, we'll jump.
Like hell we will.
No, it'll be okay. If the water's deep enough, we don't get squished to death. They'll never follow us.
How do you know?
Would you make a jump like that you didn't have?
Thank you for listening to Utah Public Radio. This is KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan. This is Utah Public Radio, Utah's favorite public radio station.